A senior developer and CX manager set out to examine accessibility and inclusion at Castos. Welcome to our podcast, Logic Accessibility. Welcome, everybody, to Logic Accessibility. We're really excited. This is our very first episode. We're going to get started by first introducing ourselves. Alec, if you'd like to say hello first.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Alec. I'm the lead developer here at Castos. Great to be here.
And my name is Kim McCaffrey. I'm the customer experience manager here at Castos. So a little bit about what we're kind of doing here with Logic Accessibility. So what is our purpose? As the title, you know, kind of implies, we're looking at accessibility within Castos across all Castos products, but more specifically, and one of the main reasons that this is Alec and I doing this together, it was really important to us, and you'd probably agree, Alec, that we wanted to kind of really put a spotlight on the developer's role in improving and building in accessibility to the process. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think a lot of the companies that I've been at before Castos didn't really focus on accessibility. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head was a marketing agency that only really focused on it because they had been sued for it before, which doesn't really count in my opinion. So it's one of those things that like a lot of software companies don't really think about how much of their audience they are just kind of ignoring and not building tools that they can actually use or enjoy using. And it's just something that we want to focus on here more as we kind of grow as a company.
Yeah. And accessibility, you know, it can mean so many different things, but from a developer standpoint, it always kind of has felt like there's a barrier there because it seems overwhelming. And of course, as you know, and probably anybody else that is working on a SaaS team or software, everybody's always kind of running on a limited bandwidth. There's always, you know, you try to push it forward. You try to keep it off the back burner. You know, sometimes it's difficult. But one of the things that's brought us to this point is that, you know, we kind of hit a moment where we recognized, hey, this isn't a nice to have. This is a need to have. This is something that needs to be part of our process, not something that we go back and improve, but it's, you know, something that as we're building, that accessibility is part of the process, part of the sprint, part of the cycle. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's just as important to focus on accessibility as we do quality or delivery time. Like it's something that we need to build into our process and make sure that we have time to do it when we're actually working on things and not have it be, you know, a lot of software development companies kind of view testing in a similar way where it's like a nice to have where, you know, if you have 4 weeks to get things done and you have a week left at the end, write your tests, or, you know, you have 4 weeks, get done with the 3 weeks, make it accessible. And that doesn't really work in either case. I speak from experience when saying that, like, if you don't prioritize good testing and good accessibility, It just doesn't happen. Those nice to haves rarely ever actually get put into the product because, like you said, we're always under some kind of, not necessarily time crunch, but we always have stuff to work on and we always have deadlines that we're trying to meet. And if you mark something as a nice to have, that is the first thing that's usually going to get cut when we're looking for places that we can cut time without cutting quality. Which in a roundabout way ends up not working because cutting accessibility and cutting testing is cutting quality. We don't necessarily think of it as that because it hasn't been taught to us to think of it that way, the same way that keeping our source code clean, keeping everything organized has been taught to us as having a high quality product. But at the end of the day, the source code and stuff, that's nice for us. That doesn't help the end user. So the accessibility aspect of that especially should be much higher prioritized than a lot of the stuff that we have been taught to prioritize traditionally, either in school or through experience.
And when we're talking about like what we're cutting out and, you know, the end user, when we look at disabilities, 20% of the population is disabled, whether it's a temporary disability, chronic disability, that is a huge percentage. Those are our end users. And not paying attention to that from a business standpoint, I mean, it's just bad business, first of all. But, you know, it just makes sense. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we went with, you know, well, it's logical, logic accessibility, where the title kind of came from. But yeah, you make a really good point. And so what kind of brought us here? So I joined the team most recently. You were here a little bit longer than I was, but it was shortly after I had joined the team. We had a user open up a support ticket and said, I can't read the information on the pricing page because my screen reader is, you know, it's not accessible to my screen reader. You know, we all kind of were talking about it in a meeting. And I was like, well, wow, that's really interesting. That's never been brought up before. We don't have users that have ever really said anything about it before. And I kind of quickly stepped forward and was kind of, I guess, thinking back, maybe a wee bit bold on my part. And I was kind of like, well, yeah, you haven't heard from them because they're not our customers. They don't make it that far. If somebody that uses a screen reader gets to the pricing page and they can't read the pricing page, they're, you know, it's safe to assume that the product is also going to be equally as inaccessible. And then we kind of started talking about it. We started talking about legal ramifications and you know, just the responsibility that if you're going to have a product that's available to the public globally, that this is something that needs to take place. And we are fortunate enough that we have a founder, just like you and I was, you know, thought, yeah, that's just logical. It just makes sense. And, you know, we immediately had that stakeholder buy-in. So like in the past, it was always a matter of presenting all of the evidence as to why it's important or kind of a building the business case and presenting it and that sort of thing. And, you know, so it's always been a challenge, at least to my experience in the past. That was not the case here. He immediately had said, well, yes, that needs to be done. And then formally like nailed it down and said, I want you, you know, to spearhead this. I want you and Alec to kind of get on this. And that's what we've been doing ever since. But it is that kind of now circling back. We have to look at existing products that we have. So for anybody that's not familiar, Castos is a podcast hosting and analytics platform. So we're looking at a web app. We're looking at a WordPress plugin. We're looking at the marketing website, just really across the board at all these different products. And I think when you and I first sat down and started saying, okay, what are we looking at here? And we came up with ended up being a pretty extensive checklist of like what was ahead of us. So, you know, we decided to start just kind of taking steps towards that. But what you're doing at the same time is not just looking at, okay, what we have to fix, but simultaneously, you're already taking steps towards building this into the process.
Yeah, when we kind of set out to do this, we kind of set two rules for ourselves. The first one was we were not, because we can't, we're too small of a company, we couldn't drop everything and go back and fix it, like have that be our main focus. But we are also in a place as a company where we're growing pretty fast. We're adding new users. We're adding new features. We're making changes to things quite a bit. So it's one of those things where we don't have to drop everything because we're already kind of touching every part of the application anyways. So kind of the rule was, any new features, any new user interface, anything fresh off the presses, never been touched before, must be accessible by default and must pass a certain amount, a certain checklist of items that we need to review to make sure it is accessible. And then for the existing parts of the application, as we are coming into those pieces and actually working on those areas, that is the time that we also go back and add the accessibility. There are also some areas that I know we don't give a lot of attention to that need to be updated on that. So we have, as part of our like normal process, we have 2 weeks of like developers can work on pretty much anything time, about every 8 weeks. So using that time to also work on those areas that I know we probably aren't going to get to through that normal process of just like, I'm working on this area anyway, so I'm going to fix it. It's kind of a three-tiered thing where everything new must be accessible by default. If you're working on something existing, improve the accessibility. And if there's a piece of the app that we know we aren't going to touch, that's where we have to actually schedule the time to go and fix it.
One of the reasons that we wanted to do kind of almost like document this journey via podcast, when we started out looking at this, I did extensive research looking for what I usually do, who has gone before us and, you know, what was their process and how did they go about it? I didn't find a whole lot for how to start to tackle this, how to nail this down. So decided, well, you know, maybe we should just have something available for folks to be able to kind of follow that along. So we're doing this initial episode. Our plan is to continue to record additional episodes and then publish it as one large series, you know, at the end. But so far, our initial steps, we determine the scope of the project. we then created a repository of tools. And that's something that we'll also be sharing along the way in show notes and blog posts. Then the pre-planning started. And that's when we kind of started nailing down that checklist. The things that we have, we've already made such great changes, not just in like the tangible changes in the product, but in our team-wide meetings, I'm already kind of hearing our team also kind of start to speak to accessibility. I'm already hearing that that's, I don't know, like pushed out more in the forefront as opposed to that afterthought beyond just you and I, but with our other team members as well. I've really found that to be really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like it's kind of similar to, not to go back to this analogy, but kind of similar to how developers approach testing, where it's like, if you give them the time, it's something that they want to do. We're all, mm-hmm. you know, everyone wants to be proud of their work. Everyone wants to feel like their work is usable and pleasant to use for as many people as possible. And that goes for developers too. And usually when that doesn't happen, it again comes back to that lack of time. So by prioritizing and saying like, we are baking time into the schedule for you to work on these things, you're basically just giving developers carte blanche to work on things that they mm-hmm. actually want to work on. They, you know, I take a lot of pride in the way that we build not just accessibility into what we do, but an overall user experience and trying to make our application something that is easy to use, that is intuitive to use, and that is pleasant to use for all of our users. Mm-hmm. And to me, having those accessibility features in there is just part of that overall quality of making sure that this is fun to use. And accessibility isn't just something that we talk about for people living with disabilities. Like it truly does make your product better for everyone, regardless of whether or not they're living with a disability. I mean, I am not legally disabled, but I have 80% hearing loss in my right ear and 20% hearing loss in my left ear. So simple things like podcasters using stereo channels for like, you have two people on the show, the left person is in your left headphone, the right person is your right headphone. If I don't have the ability to like tweak an equalizer, I can't hear almost half of the conversation that's happening in that episode. It's little things like that. You don't have to be legally deaf or legally blind or have a what is considered a legal disability for these things to help you. Everyone has a little bit of hearing loss. Everyone has a little bit of eyesight loss as you get older. It's just something that benefits all of us.
Yeah. Accessibility and those types of improvements and features and building that in, it really does. It adds quality to the user experience for all. It's really kind of fascinating. And there's so much like great information and data that's out there about that. But things that we did change. So right out of the gate, thankfully, we've got a great friend and designer who was able to kind of really quickly move. And we were able to create an accessible pricing page. But also from kind of outside of the developer scope, from within my role as a customer experience manager, how we approach support. That needed to change. And in the middle of all of this, we were migrating from Help Scout as our help desk to Zendesk, which of course is for anybody that's ever migrated, a help desk was a huge undertaking, but it was also a great opportunity to go back and go through the hundreds of different articles and revise them, which I did one by one to make sure that those were accessible because we had kind of like directional elements in a help doc, things like click on this at the top right-hand corner or left-hand corner, or, you know, referring to the color of a button, that sort of thing in a written help doc is not accessible, but also how we approach support in a ticket. So making sure that our team isn't using, you know, kind of similar language in tickets. And so it's just, you know, accessibility shows up in every customer touch point. Every customer touch point, accessibility is a consideration. Already great learning experience, and I've grown a lot, and my understanding has grown a lot since we started this project.
Yeah, and here's another example of improving accessibility helps everyone. In my role, I don't work with the WordPress plugin as much as some of our other developers. I'm usually either working on the web application side or doing, you know, management and setting up tools for other developers. So I don't know how to use the WordPress plugin all that well. And the help docs weren't necessarily all that useful to me before because they were written for someone who is coming in with no knowledge, and there was some kind of disconnect where I had enough knowledge that it kind of made them harder to read, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it does.
It does.
Whereas after you went through and like changed all of our health docs, I use our own like Zendesk support documents to help me work on the plugin because I don't have that knowledge, and the documentation that we have now is genuinely good enough that it helps me in my work as a developer. And that is something that like I didn't realize our old help docs were, I didn't realize they were wrong. I know, like as soon as you started pointing out some of the things to me, like not using directional indicators or not using color, those things immediately make sense. But it's not just down to things like that. It's also just the way things are worded and how the document flows and whether you can easily reference things using the noun instead of the pronoun, so it's clear what you're talking about. All of those little things are things that I just didn't think about when I couldn't use the help docs before. And as soon as those things were changed, it felt like we had all new support documents. So, and again, that's just another example of like, we did that to improve the accessibility of our support articles. And I hope that it worked out well for people who need those, but it also worked out really well for us, like internally. And you wouldn't really think about that when it's our support articles that are
right.
being revised. It's like, I should know the things in our support articles. Right. But like, if it's not something that I touch on a day-to-day basis, I don't have that knowledge, and having those support articles rewritten to be more digestible to all audiences really helped me be able to install all the plugin locally, get everything spun up, and actually start debugging some issues. So it was really helpful in that regard as well.
Well, that just made my day, I have to tell you. But you do make a really good point. So a lot of times, especially in software, when we're talking about accessibility, it just seems like folks kind of default to blind, low vision, deaf, hard of hearing. So we're looking at transcripts and we're looking at color contrast and that sort of thing. But accessibility is auditory, cognitive, neurological, physical, speech, visual, mobility. We're talking about a whole spectrum of different, you know, types of things that we need to be considering. So what we're sort of doing right now and what's next, the big thing that we're tackling right now, we have a listener analytics page. So that's it's like a core functionality of Castos. People really like to be able to, you know, they're not just kind of coming in and publishing their podcasts. You know, so Castos is doing like all the hosting, but people come into Castos, they're uploading episodes, they're writing show notes, you know, all of that fun stuff. They like to then be able to go to these analytics. So how often episodes are being listened to, what are their top episodes geographically? Where are the listeners? That sort of thing. That page and those tools were not accessible to screen readers. But that area of the app, you know, it does present a unique challenge because that data is presented in the form of like charts and tables. And when you and I kind of started looking at how do you make a table accessible, that great video that we came across of here's a table that a screen reader can read, but it's not accessible, and here's why. So as opposed to like reading the information in a way that made sense, maybe across in lines instead of columns, it was reading straight down column A, straight down column B, straight down column C. So none of that information made any sense. So you and I were like, oh, wow, this is going to be a unique challenge, you know, to how to take this information and, you know, make it accessible to screen readers. You know, its core functionality is super important, but wow, it's like a lot more complex than I had anticipated.
Yeah, and I think that section presents kind of a unique challenge too, in that like the main usage of that is to get quick information about like, you know, are my numbers going up? Are they going down? Are they staying steady? Where are my listenerships from? And those are things that are pretty easy to represent visually in a graph, but I haven't really found the best way to represent that sort of data in a format that can be used by people who can't read the graphs. So it's kind of a unique situation where I want to not just make those tables accessible and have, you know, be able to read the literal data out, but how do we also make it so that they still get that additional information that the graphs are conveying of what is happening to my listenership, where they're primarily located, what sources are they using to listen to, being able to get a good idea of how those things relate to each other. Because I think that that's one thing that I'm not sure that just making the table read the correct way kind of conveys is getting the context around each line and not having to remember that your five rows before this had these numbers and this one is higher. So that means my numbers are going up. Like, just having it be in a way that you can kind of intuit those changes in your analytics in the same way that you can with a chart, but in a format that is readable by a screen reader. And that's sort of kind of the key challenge that we're dealing with that page, and one that is both interesting and difficult to tackle, but one that if we get it right, we can use that all in so many other places in the app. It's a goal worth pursuing, and one that we are going to pursue. And I hope that we can find something that really conveys that information in the same, gives that same information, but conveys it in a way that everyone can access it.
And I haven't been able to really find a whole lot. Is there anything out there that you found at all?
I've gotten some suggestions, nothing really concrete. I think the one that sort of makes the most sense, at least initially, is to have kind of a summary of what the chart actually says, because, you know, we can intuit that information from the numbers themselves. It's not necessarily putting them on the graph that makes them intuitable. It's seeing the relationships between mm-hmm. them, and we can process those relationships on the back end. So we can have a paragraph of text that says, you know, between these dates, your numbers were generally around this area and were steadily rising. After this date, things started to dip a little bit, something like that, where we're kind of giving an explanation of what's in the charts without having to have a person do that every time. Cause we have thousands of customers, so it's not feasible for us to have those be custom written on every single one. So how do we come up with a system where we can, from just the numbers themselves, get that intuitive information that we are trying to convey with the charts and just kind of put it in a summary? And I don't know that that's the best solution, but so far, that's kind of the one that I'm leaning towards, because the implementation of it should be fairly straightforward, and I can know for sure that they can at least get that information. Whether it's the ideal format, I'm less certain of that, but that's kind of what we're leaning towards right now.
And that kind of speaks to the spirit in which we are approaching this. We're not kidding ourselves that, oh, this is going to be a one and done sort of thing, because neither you or I are blind, or neither you or I, you know, have number of different disabilities. We're not going to get it right the first time. But what we are doing is we're listening to our customer base. We're listening to our users. We're diligently researching, and we are open to the scrutiny and being called out and making changes as needed. So this is never going to be something that we just say, oh, well, we got that right. So maybe, you know, we take a swing at the analytics tables and charts, and it just comes back like makes totally no sense whatsoever. I, just being, you know, the customer facing person that I am, I anticipate that we'll be told pretty quickly if that's the case, that we didn't get it right. And we will go back, of course, and we will keep working on it, you know, and that's part of the work, you know, and how it should be for. So we're going to be prepared to iterate. But the other thing that we have talked about really recently is audio transcripts. For anybody that's podcasted, been in podcasting, transcripts are a pretty big deal. A lot of times, you know, you kind of see them like, oh, you should have a transcript to go with your podcast for SEO purposes. Accessibility really is even at the forefront of some folks' minds. It is a pain point for podcasters to be able to have audio transcripts generated and how to add them, whether they should be in show notes or as a downloadable file. But it is a pain point. It is a, you know, you can go on any Facebook group for podcasters or any social media group, and inevitably there will be a conversation about, you know, how do you go about transcripts? And it's always like it's just something that is just a universal kind of pain point for podcasters on how to provide accurate, readable, scannable, whatever the case may be, transcripts. So one of the things that we kind of just started kicking around, exploring the options, you know, to be able, whether that's like a built-in audio transcript solution, because we already have that now, but it's more like an integration that we have from another service. But to be able to make that more available to more podcasters, build it in, and kind of just really removing that pain point, removing that friction, so that it's just logical. Well, of course, I'm going to add transcripts to my podcast episode. Why wouldn't I? That's, you know, it's right there. So I don't know where that's going to take us. We kind of started kicking that around. Our team was kind of batting that back and forth on Slack a little bit. But I was excited to, even just by the idea of, how about we just remove this pain point? Because it is such a huge pain point for podcasters. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's a lot of solutions that we can look at for something like that. You know, I don't know that we necessarily have the machine learning chops to create our own automatic transcription service per se, but there's other options out there. You can have them check against each other, something to just improve the overall quality. And then the other question that we had was sort of the deliverability of it. Our plugin for our WordPress plugin, Seriously Simple Podcasting, has a way that you can upload those transcripts, and in the podcast player itself, there's a place that you can then go download them. They're available on the web pages, but no one that I'm aware of, as far as like the podcast listening apps, has any way for you to really view a transcript in the app. And for that matter, as far as I know, there's no standard for adding a transcript to an RSS feed, so they wouldn't even know where to look for it. And that's one of the things that we're kind of toying about with, is maybe there's some way that we can include a transcript in an RSS feed in a way that doesn't make the RSS feed just massive and multiple gigabytes to download, because, you know, transcripts are a lot of text, and it is just text, but it's text for every single episode in your feed. So not bloating the feed, but also in a way that maybe we can kind of encourage some podcast players to implement support, like have each sentence fragment have a timestamp, and you can turn on sort of like a closed captioning. We kind of kicked around that idea a little bit, and maybe trying to like come up with an implementation for that others can use, just something to make transcripts more accessible, because even the podcasters who do the work or pay for a professional transcribing now, the discoverability of those things. I mean, you mentioned that most people talk about it for SEO. I'm not sure if that's entirely because of just the SEO or because people know that like they're hard to find right now. If you don't go directly to an episode on a podcast website, you're probably not going to be able to find the transcript. And that's not how most people listen to podcasts. They listen through Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, right. Google Podcasts, Spotify, whatever. So putting those in a place where it's not only are they available, but they're discoverable. That's kind of the two-sided coin to everything, is just putting something out into the world is not enough.
Right.
You have to make it accessible, and you have to make it discoverable, and you have to make it so people know that it exists. Otherwise, it might as well not be there. So that's kind of what we were talking through, and just trying to get a feel for is, you know, how can we not just make the act of having a transcript for your podcast easier, but also make it easier for your listeners to find.
That's a really good point. The discoverability of it absolutely. It was really exciting, though, to see that conversation even taking place and everybody kind of getting a little bit excited about it. Oh, like, we can do it this way, or we can do it that way. I think speaks to, you know, we're starting to see accessibility already woven into the fabric of how we approach things, and even generating kind of like new ideas. That conversation is just being driven from the top down. It's been really exciting to see. You know, this is where we're at. We're going to continue to record content. We're going to continue this conversation and documenting this journey. We do plan to continue sharing maybe what didn't work. Maybe in a future episode, you'll find out like, well, that didn't go very well with the analytics page, or find out that we, you know, stumbled across a solution that we are going to be able to duplicate, you know, in other areas. But either way, we're excited to share this documentation, even if it's embarrassing at some points. We're excited to share those wins, really, more than anything. So please keep an eye out for future episodes. Join us. And if you have any ideas, if you're working on accessibility, if you're working on looking at accessibility and inclusion in your products, if you have ideas, things that have worked for you or haven't worked for you, any advice, please feel free to reach out to us at hello@castos.com. We welcome your feedback, your thoughts, your ideas. And thank you so much. And please join us next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Logic Accessibility, hosted by Alec Joy and Kim McCaffrey, and supported by Castos Podcasting and the dedicated members of the Castos team. At Castos, our goal is simple. make podcasting easy and accessible to all. Be sure to head over to castos.com for show notes and resources, as well as other podcasts created by members of the Castos team. Thanks again for listening.